You're listening to the Gold Squadron Podcast, your home for X-Wing discussion, strategy, and entertainment.
Hello, everyone. My name is Dio Morales, host of the Gold Squadron Podcast, and welcome to our first installment of the Q&A series. Our goal here is to have a monthly, maybe bi-weekly, maybe even weekly Q&A series where I answer your questions about X-Wing, Star Wars, or anything else you guys want to talk about. For our format, we're going to be starting with patrons' questions first, and then we'll go to Facebook questions and any other medium in which people sent us questions. Our first question comes from Jesse Gersh. He asks, so we've been told that Saw's Renegade X-Wing and U-Wing pilots will have the illicit slot. How do you guys see that impacting the Rebel list building and play? So from what we know about illicits right now, a lot of them are one use only. I don't want to say that they're niche, but they're not necessarily what I would say cards that define the way a ship plays. It simply gives it an extra opportunity. So what I would say is I don't think it's going to do anything like shape the Rebel list building, but I do think that if somebody wants to use the abilities that these unique pilots are going to have, then we will see somebody maybe just throw in an illicit. I don't think that's something you have to chase in your list building when it comes to Rebels in second edition. Our next question comes from Michael Doe. He asks, how do you continue to advance as far as player skill? This includes playing the game and list building. How do you become a better player? So I think one of the things, Michael, that you have to look at is why are you playing? Like, I know that seems like a really broad answer to your question, but I'm going to kind of bring it down here in a minute. So if you're playing competitively compared to playing casual, I think the answers will differ. I'm going to assume you're talking competitively. I'll talk about casual at the end, but since it seems that's how you're framing the question. So competitively, I think one of the things that people aren't usually comfortable doing is being self-critical. And I'm not talking about being like self-damning, like you're downing yourself. But when you play a game and after you lost, actually being able to self-assess what went wrong. Not blaming dice, mind you, it happens sometimes. But really being able to take that game, decompartmentalize it, and figure out, okay, what went wrong here? What were my good choices when it came to the game? Was this just a bad matchup? Was it a good matchup? What did I do positioning? What could have changed the outcome of the game? I think if you start to break down games like that, that's how you progress. That's what has really helped me is self-reflection. I keep a notebook in my box. Actually, my box, you can see it right there. I keep a notebook where I write down every squad I play against, and I just jot a couple of different, just a couple of little notes in there when it comes to things that, decisions that I made were good and that are bad, what worked, what didn't in that matchup. And that's something that just the act of writing it down allows you to have that a little bit more hardwired into your brain, and you'll be able to recall it better in future matchups. The second part of your question, when it comes to list building, honestly, list building is very challenging. We're about to hit second edition where, you know, we see it, we have a bunch of pilots and upgrades, but we're not entirely sure what are the point costs, right? So we can assume some combinations of things and try to kind of game what are some lists that we might be able to put together. But the issue is that when it comes to a competitive meta, you have, there are lists, like I honestly believe that there are top tier lists that probably will or would could exist in our current current wave competitively, but we are you know, we're steered by what is popular, what has won recently, and we read and react off of those things. I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, but that's just, that's how we work as human beings, is reacting to what ends up being successful. So, you know, when it comes to progressing in list building, honestly, I don't have a perfect answer for that one. You have to, like, I'm not a fan of chasing synergy. I would say that's probably one big thing. So for instance, if you lose one piece in your list, let's say you're flying a 3 or 4 ship build, and if there is one piece that if that ship dies, you no longer have a chance to win, I don't think that's the way to go. Because you want to, if you get into an end game with any of your ships, you're going to want to have an opportunity to win. You know, there are ships that have been labeled as end game ships. For instance, earlier in the season, I was flying Kylo in 2 gunboats. If I got to the end game with only a gunboat, I probably lost the game. My goal was always to get Kylo to the end. So, but he was built out in order to evade taking damage or being shot. So there was built into the list, right? So, again, just trying to find pieces that work well together, but you don't want to lose one and everything falls apart. You'd like to be able to have an opportunity to win, even if you just lose one. Then Mike Doe also asked, how do you go about teaching the game to new players of different ages? So when you say different ages, I'm not sure what the range is, but me personally, you know, when new people come into the store, it's either me or Ron who take the new player aside and, you know, give them, you know, the tutorial game. We play with some very simplified lists, no upgrades, and take them step by step. When it comes to children, if you're trying to teach kids, I would say you want to start with no upgrades, and the goal is just moving the ships around and getting dice rolled as soon as possible. Playing on a smaller mat, that 2x2 box that Fantasy Flight sent to a lot of game stores, I think is a wonderful idea because you get engaged in battle much sooner. If we're talking about just adults, one pitfall that I see a lot of people do is saying, oh, with this first game, let's not play with asteroids. I think that's a huge mistake, personally. You want to start from the beginning, set your players up for success, understanding that this game is more than just, you know, going straight at each other, K-turn, do it again. Those situations happen in the game, but you want to be able to understand that there's good positioning, bad position. You're going to have to deal with asteroids eventually. I think it's a mistake to start without asteroids. Even if you're teaching this to a kid, tell them you don't want to hit that. So I would start there. And Mike, if you want some more detailed ideas, depending on what these age ranges are, feel free to reach out to me individually and we'll get that figured out. Cody and Deborah Solly ask, what cards in 1.0 that are heavily used are not in 2.0? How do you think this affects strategy and list building? Also, how great does it feel to fly T-65 X-Wings again? Heart, heart, heart. And the original post. So you mentioned VI. We haven't seen adaptability. That's pretty common. I know it's very similar. Two other cards that are heavily used that I notice we haven't seen anything for are Expertise and also Lightweight Frame. Will these exist? Honestly, I think that Expertise in its current form will never be a thing. It's too popular, too heavily abused. You know, just being able to just change all focus results to hits, even for 4 points. Oh, it's 4 points. It's a lot of points. It is, but when you think about how often it can trigger, it's way too good. If it exists and if it transfers to second edition, I could see something like, you know, maybe it's similar to Heavy Laser Cannon, where it's in the bullseye only, which would be significantly harder. But even then, I think it should probably have some type of charge system, and maybe between charges and making it only bullseye, it'd be able to be in a playable point costs, you know, when it comes to balancing the game. I think that's where that card has to be. When it comes to lightweight frame, I do find it interesting that we haven't seen that for second edition, as it did really bump up the playability of a lot of the Imperial ships. But I think the reason is because the overall offensive power level of the game is coming down. Lightweight frame, the developers might be looking at it and say maybe it's not as needed as it was in our current first edition setting. So those are a couple of those cards that I'm seeing. How do I think this affects strategy and list building? Well, we know that modification for dice are going to be at a premium in second edition. So, you know, we know that expertise isn't a thing. So, for instance, one really popular build that one of our co-hosts, Nate Moore, likes to fly is Ray with expertise. So you get to reroll two attack or defense dice. Let's talk about just attacking. You get to roll two attack dice up to two when in arc. And usually you're rolling three. Range one is four. If you had Finn, it's five. You roll these, reroll two of the blanks that happen. And I mean, when I'm playing him, it's just like always like four hits constantly, because they're double modified shots. And that gives you very high percentage of getting all hits. It's too easy. Oh, Ray has to get you an arc. It's still too easy, right? She could turn around super easy. Oops, sorry about that. It's still super easy. So when it comes to list building, people are still going to be chasing the ability to have the most modified shot that they can, and trying to find the balance between survivability and offensive modification. So I think that's where we're going to see the list kind of trend to, but we don't know enough about point costs to see what is worth it, what is not. So we'll have to see there. As for T65s, I'm loving it. You can see behind me somewhere. Where are they? Where are they? Up there. There you go. And my X-Wing's up there. And it's maybe a little bit hard to see if you're not on a computer screen. But I'm loving it. They're a lot of fun to fly. And I'm really enjoying the S-foils and being able to barrel roll with them. It's a lot of fun. So Adam Stevenson asks our first general Star Wars question. Don't be afraid to send these our way. Honestly, I love answering these kind of questions. I'm a huge Star Wars fan. And my specialty, I would say, is this current canon. I have read every book and almost every comic book when it comes to all of the current stuff. And I have started stretching into the extended universe. So I am not afraid to dive into all things Star Wars. So feel free to send questions like this our way. So Adam asks, I've heard recently in a brief conversation that the Republic were not necessarily the good guys in the Clone Wars. Why is that? The Jedi are always the good guys, right? So I think the problem with this whole thing is the idea of the separatist nations, besides, you know, let's take out Palpatine, let's take out Dooku and that whole essentially forced war aspect of the Clone Wars, which is the whole reason why it happened. But the idea that these other nations wanted to start their own republic, essentially their own government, is, I think it's fair and fine. They weren't happy with where things were, and they said, all right, we're pulling away, we'd rather not. And I think that looking at just that conflict, you know, the Republic fighting this government is kind of like the Revolutionary War when it comes to that, right? These smaller, usually smaller planets that are farther out were under the umbrella of the Republic, and now they're saying, hey, I think we're done. We want to band together in order to make sure that we're taken care of more than your inner core worlds, because right now we're getting the short end of the stick. So in that, if you want to look at it that way, I would say that the Republic were the aggressors and the bad guys in that whole thing. you know, one of the, if you look at Revenge of the Sith, the Separatists, they lost, kind of, right? They end up, it's not 100% clear, the winner of the war, you could say, because the Republic isn't a thing after the war. It turns into the Empire, right? So it ends up being under this giant umbrella, and then the Empire starts oppressing these worlds again, and no, the Republic didn't win the war, and also the Separatists didn't win the war because of what we took out of the scenario at first, because of Palpatine and his manipulation, his forcing of this war. And, you know, the Jedi were just pawns in the whole thing. They didn't really matter. They were the generals. They were like, hey, we're peacekeepers. I think they really lost their way in the whole Clone Wars. It's sad. Like, I really enjoyed the whole Clone Wars series and seeing them interact with the clones. I found that very entertaining. But when it comes to the Jedi Code, they shouldn't have been doing any of that. They shouldn't have been involved in the war at all. And yes, they were mighty warriors and all that, but they essentially were supposed to be like the police, not the military, if that makes sense. Jason Campbell asks, so with the addition of Force powers and the separation of Rebels and Resistance and Empire First Order, do you think we could see the addition of Clone Wars factions? If so, what ships would you like to see as Wave 1 of those factions? So, yes, I do think that eventually we will end up getting these Clone Wars factions. And here's the reason why I think so. In the original inception of the game, and when you talk to the developers and in certain interviews and stuff, they at first talked about it as X-Wing as a galactic Civil War dogfighting game. And that has changed over time. Now they just describe it as a Star Wars dogfighting game. Now, I think it will take time, but they've dipped their toe in the water a little bit by adding the ARC 170, yes, as a, you know, scarce, you know, rebuilt and taped together ARC 170 ship. You know, they dipped their toe into the Clone Wars because that's straight out of there, and people didn't have a crazy reaction. I know that there is some fear with the prequel stuff, but honestly, Star Wars is Star Wars, and there's a lot of really cool designs in the prequels, like a lot. And I would love to see those on the table. As for Wave 1 for each, I think, you know, you have to get the Naboo Starfighter because that was in Episode 1. The real question there is, do we get an Anakin Skywalker pilot in that? We probably shouldn't, to be completely honest. But we might. Who knows, right? He did a cool trick. Come on. His ability has to do something with a barrel roll. If it doesn't, missed opportunity, FFG. As for the Separatists, I'll be honest, I'm not as familiar with the names of all of their ships, but there are tons of those different variations on droid ships, droid gunships, all this kind of stuff that we can see. Vulture droids, I think, are the first ones that really pop into my head. Those are the ones that you see kind of flip from standing and walking around to being starfighters. I think that would be a really appropriate Wave 1 Separatist ship. Andreas Carlson asks, do you think every ship will get an increase in points for second edition, not just doubled? What fears do you have for the new edition? Like, will people start or stop playing X-Wing? You know, let's talk about the points first. Yes, some ships are going to be more than just doubled. I think that's going to be the formula for most things. FFG most likely took what I would have done is you take everything that exists in the game right now and in its current state, what is too good? And you kind of adjust from there. You do the double and you kind of have a rough estimation of where everything should be sitting. Now, we know that they have, for instance, one of the formulas that they have is 12 points equals one attack dice in first edition. You see that with the Punishing One title in first edition, and also the Outrider and Heavy Laser Cannon combo for the 2400. Now, I'm curious to know if they still think that way. You know, 4 points is a shield upgrade in first edition, and 3 points is a hull upgrade. Do they still look at the math that way? According to interviews and things, they don't look at it that way anymore. They're starting to look at what the whole ship, the sum of its parts when it comes to the point costs. So that would mean that they really need to look at possible combos and things before just assigning a point cost to it. It does have to be more than just doubling the cost. I think that's a way to start when it comes to the generic pilots, and we can kind of go from there. As for fears, you know, we're in an age right now with the internet where instant gratification is a thing, and I don't mean to get preachy on this, but, you know, if people don't like it, people usually just jump off the bandwagon right away or jump on if they're excited. So we're going to have both. There's going to be people who, as soon as second edition hits, they're, I mean, even just with the announcement of second edition, you had some people just stop playing. They said, hey, not because like they're stopping and waiting for second edition. They're just like, I'm done with X-Wing. I have invested in the first edition. I'm done. And there are some, there's a lot of misconceptions also with second edition. You know, people just saying like, you know, it's a cash grab. I think that is a wrong statement. I understand, like, some people, I got a long email chain with a couple of people just talking about cost. But when it comes to, if you compare it to other games where they have had reboots, you have to rebuy everything. Like literally everything. You get new models, new book, all this, you know, all this new equipment. And FFG, they tried, and we need to see how it ends up coming out, but they tried really hard to make it as easy of a transition as possible with these conversion kits. And they even said that for future waves, when it comes to cards and new things that are in, that are not in the conversion kits, but come in the new ship releases, they're going to be releasing essentially card packs for those releases. Like, they are really working with past players to say, hey, you know, we're going to take care of you. You guys invested in the game. You brought us this far. People saying that it's a cash grab, I think I don't want to say that they're being selfish, but they're not looking at the big picture, because it is true. The first edition game is in a broken state. There's too many defensive stacking combos. Offense is just way too high. And we need to rein it in, because a lot of people are not having fun when playing. When we talk about their sales, let's just talk about that. You know, according the understanding is that a majority of their sales actually comes from people who don't even play the game. They're Star Wars fans who see the models, they're highly detailed, and they buy them and they place them on their desk or in their collection. You know, the second edition reboot, if that is the way that their sales are, let's give a 75% cut to non-players who are buying these models. The second edition reboot does nothing for them. Like, this is not for trying to get more sales on models, because the models are comparable. Like, they look almost exactly the same. Like, somebody who's just collecting models isn't going to buy another X-Wing. You know, oh, the wings open and close. Maybe that might, you don't even know that when you're just looking at the pack. So, you know, this other section of people, the 25%, that's who the reboot is for. It's for making sure that the longevity of the game can stay, so that we can control the crazy combo wing. And, you know, I know I have some people in my own squad who are not super happy that second edition is coming, because they've gotten really good with a top meta squad and they're not ready for change. And I think that right there is the fear for a lot of people, is change. you're going to have to adjust. And if you don't, you know, if you had success only with things that are being phased out of the game, those people are nervous. It's the truth. How do you get ready for that? Well, I think if you plan to stick with X-Wing, if I were you, I would stop using turrets. I would stop using bombs when it comes to like in their current form. Like, I would just really just try to stick to the fundamentals of the game, practice flying formations, understanding different ways to, you know, pincer and flank, all these kind of just really working on the fundamentals of the game rather than leaning super heavily on things like, you know, harpoon missiles and TLTs and all that. So I'm not, if you want to fly it, I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm saying that if you want to transition and have a better time when second edition does come, you'll be more prepared if you do that. As for my personal fears, you know, honestly, I'm not afraid. I am extremely excited, and I do know that there are going to be people who quit the game when second edition comes, and there's going to be people who had quit the game in the past because of the brokenness of it who are coming back. Honestly, I think at first, when it all levels out, we're going to be the same and slowly start to rise, because I think some players who quit the game initially because they had an emotional reaction to them ending first edition will come back. They're going to see their friends are having fun. They're playing this game that they're, you know, it's different, but it's still familiar to them, and they'll jump back in. Honestly, I think a lot of those emotional decision people are going to end up jumping back in. I would hope, and to really just take a long look and see why is it that you're maybe jumping ship. If that's the, you know, if that's you, I'm not saying that it's you, Andreas, but people who maybe had that initial reaction. Benjamin Jackson asks, do you think Swarm's going to be a big part of the initial 2.0 meta? Yes, I absolutely do. Swarms have not been competitively viable for a while, specifically the TIE Swarm. And people who started the game in the age of the TIE Swarm and were used to flying, you know, 8, 7, 6 ships, they're going to jump on that right away, however it's possible. And just looking at some of the combos that you have when it comes to Howlrunner, Iden Versio, and then you add in, you know, 4 other TIE fighters, like, that just seems really powerful. So I think there are going to be a lot of players on Swarm at the beginning. Isaac Carter asks, what drives you to do all the work you do for the X-Wing community? I don't like this question because I'm not a fan of talking about myself too much. But I have been a person, let me talk about teaching, because that's my, you know, my other job. you know, in my teaching career, I'm all about doing it right the first time. That anybody is capable of learning anything and doing it well at their level. So for instance, there's a lot of misconceptions that a beginning violin player sounds bad. Beginning violin player equals sounds bad, but that shouldn't be the case. The beginning violin player should sound good on what they've learned at the beginning level. So, you know, that's my thought process when it comes to doing everything. When it comes down to it, why I do this is, at my heart, I'm a teacher. I love teaching. I like expanding people's minds, having discussions, being able to really share these experiences with as many people in the world as I can, not just people who can go to premier events. You know, by doing the streams, I'm bringing that event, that tournament, into those people's home or on their commute, whether they're watching it live or in the future. Like, I think that's a really amazing thing. And I know when it comes to my teaching, I use some of these same techniques. Like, I stream my concerts and I create videos for my students, and it's so that, you know, people can always have access to this information and be able to grow. And my goal is to try to make as high quality of content as possible. And I know that I'm tangenting a little bit from the question, because you asked what drives me to do it. You know, I want to do it right. I want to do as much as possible, and just the desire to do more and create quality, I guess, is the answer there, Isaac. Kevin Schwedeman asks, will I need to buy a new core set to play, or just a conversion kit I want? So my understanding is that you will need the core set if you plan on playing Rebels or Empire, because your Rebel and Empire conversion kits do not have the X-Wing conversions for all of the X-Wings and all the TIE Fighters that are in the core set. They're not in both. So you will need the core set. Not only that, you're going to need the second edition templates. If you don't get some third-party ones, I would suggest Curlpaw Creatives personally, all the great work that they've done with us. And also you need the damage deck, because that has changed. So you do need a core set and whatever conversion kit you want to buy. One suggestion, though, I know that some players are planning on going scum. What you might be able to get away with is purchasing third-party acrylic templates, find a second edition damage deck on the secondary market, because people are going to be buying multiple core sets. I'm sure that you can get one, maybe even just get one for free from a friend, and then buy your scum kit. Like, that could be an absolute easy way to get into second edition without buying a core set if you're planning on playing only scum. If you're going to be playing Rebels or Empire, though, you're going to need that box. Joseph Moore asks, do you think a lot of people will wait to play second edition until more waves are released? I know that this is a concern for some people, but one thing that FFG assured us right away is that we're going to have different types of events that will require different list building. We know that one of the types of tournaments will be wave one only. So that'll be for scum. That's your Fire Spray, your Fang Fighter, and now your Lando Falcon, as well as I think that's it for them. Then you, for Empire, you have the TIE Fighter, the TIE Advanced, and then for Rebels, you have the X-Wing and the Y-Wing. So that's where we're going to have one type of tournament structure. When it comes to the ships and the conversion kits and all of the, you know, up to wave 14 that we have for first edition, we might get some other different formats that will allow you to play that. But I think the main format that we'll see at some of the bigger events when it comes to premier events will start with wave one only, because the goal for FFG is to not only make it so that players who played in the past be able to play second edition, but also to get the new players who are just seeing X-Wing for the first time to be able to have a chance against somebody, you know, like, hey, I can't find a Houndstooth anywhere that was released 2 years ago, and, you know, that's like the best ship or something like that, you know. By making those bigger events, streamlining what's allowed, I think that's going to be a successful thing for bringing in new players. But we'll have different formats, and of course, at your, you know, friendly neighborhood game store, you guys can make up whatever rules you have, because the app is going to have the points for everything, so you guys can open it up as much as you want. Mark Pace asks, what is the perfect beverage for flying casual? See, I am kind of lame. I drink water. I, with the cap on, apparently. Steve Martin asks, do you think the shift from 1.0 to 2.0 will put experienced players and newcomers on the same level of play? While I don't believe that totally, one thing you have to understand is that people who already play the game don't have to necessarily think about every little thing they're doing. For instance, you understand ship moves, do an action. You know, you understand the order of combat and all these things that you might take for granted when a new player is coming in and has to, like, okay, what's the next step? Like that, thus the process of going through the game is stressful on a person's mind because you're having to use a certain amount of brain power to just understand the steps. So I think people who already play will have a bit of an advantage, but I think overall, because the power level of the game when it comes to list building has come down, right? The top has come down, those newer players are going to have a better chance at catching up. And also because all of these ships require arced fighting, I mean, people are going to have to fly at each other. I think even new players, even though they might not win all the time, they're still going to be able to, you know, at least kill some ships. And that's the other thing that I think is important in the game. Like, things have to die in order for people to have fun. Like, that's just part of the game. Like, the ships need to blow up. You need to have those dramatic moments. And I think second edition will at least bring the game to a point where new players will have a ground to stand on. And I think if you have new players, I think the threat cards are the way to go when it comes to putting some squads together for starting out. So I think if you want to make sure your new players are successful, start there with the threat cards and then start to expand out a little bit. Now, our next question comes from Timothy Hames. Now, he actually sent us like 20-something questions. Timothy, I'm going to get to every single one of your questions, but not all in this video. So I'm going to touch on four of them, and we'll kind of throw a few in there in our future Q&As. Thank you for your excitement for this segment. I really appreciate it. So the first one I'm going to talk about here is, do you ever teach your students to play X-Wing? No, I don't. Personally, I try not to mix too much of my teaching life with X-Wing life, mostly because I am so heavily involved. Like, the kids, they know that I play a game and that I really like it and stuff like that. But I try not to talk too much about Gold Squadron and all that. I try not to bring it up because I don't want a parent bringing up something that I maybe said or did on a video stream, you know, at a parent-teacher conference. Like, it's not the appropriate place for it. And also, the other part is that I really don't have the time in my teaching schedule to do it. After school clubs are reserved for curricular things only, so X-Wing, I could probably write a lesson plan and explain, you know, spatial reasoning and understanding tactics and things like that, but I don't have the opportunity to do it, so it just hasn't happened yet. Next question is, Solo or Rogue One, which is a better movie? Man, you are you're busting out the big ones here. So I would say, enjoyment wise, I enjoyed both these movies a lot. But what you cannot take away from Rogue One is, like, Solo was about a character that we knew already. Like, we kind of understood his mannerisms, his you know, that he always makes the good choice no matter what. We understood Chewbacca as well. We understood that Lando was kind of, you know, a little cringy, but, like, cool at the same time. Like, we understood those characters already. Rogue One gave us a full list of brand new characters that we followed around. And that newness cannot be, you can't compare that, you know, in those movies. So personally, if I had to choose, gun to my head, I guess the answer is Rogue One. Do you want more ships with moving parts? Yes, but is my answer. Like, I am not I really love the U-Wing. The U-Wing is super cool. It opens and closes. The Upsilon shuttle is also really awesome. The X-Wing, like, I like the idea that they can open and close. But I know, for instance, my two partisan X-Wings, they kind of just kind of chill at like the half open position, like mostly open, like not all the way, but they also don't close all the way. And I saw that on Reddit, some people had opened them up and showed that there's like a bunch of glue in there. So after time of using them, I guess they'll loosen up. I think the more usable the moving parts are, the more fun they are. So as long as FFG keeps up in the quality on the moving parts, I'm in. Alfred Schnabel asks our last question. He asks, what is best in life? And the answer to that, my opinion, is love. Thank you very much for joining us. This was super fun to do, and we will be doing these maybe bi-weekly, maybe monthly if we get enough questions, maybe even once a week. So I'm going to make a post. You'll see it on both Patreon and Facebook. So thank you again, and I'll see you next week. My name's Dio Morales. Gold Squadron, out. Hello, everyone. My name's Dio Morales, host of the Gold Squadron podcast, and welcome to our first installment of the Q&A...